Parshat Ki Tisa. For reasons that will become obvious in a moment, I'm going to dedicate this year to a very special woman. Her name was Gladys Rothenberg, Golda Rivka Bat Yitzchak Mordechai HaKohen. She was a wonderful person, mother of a really close friend of mine, who happens to have been one of the reasons that we have this yeshiva. He was the one who put the idea in our heads, along with her moish, and pushed us to do this, and even helped with some of the startup funding, and has been a supporter of Oraita for many years. And he's also a chavrusa. And he came up with an idea a number of years ago, and started asking different people, rabbanim, whatever, this question. And most of us had never really thought about this question before. And it bothered him that none of us had thought about this question before, so he started looking around. And he couldn't find a good answer to this question. So he started doing his own research. And he came up with an idea. And I remember he called me and asked me, what do you think about this idea? I said, wow, that's an amazing idea, but you got to find some support for that. Like, how do we... And he started looking at different psukim and seeing, and he developed this idea, and he wrote it up as Dvar Torah. And I think it's a powerful idea, and we're going to take this. The part of this that you really like will be his, and the part of this that you're not sure about will be what I added. But the most amazing thing about this is that sometime later, a friend of his said, you know, this idea, you're not the first one to come up with this idea. He was so excited. There's a sefer called the Maaseh Hashem. It's a sefer of Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi. Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi lived in the 1500s at the time of the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch. And he was a tremendous God of Torah. The Pnei Yoshua writes about him that, you know, that there are not enough words to speak about, you know, the godless of this person. The Shulchan Aruch wrote him questions. The Ramah wrote him questions. The Marshal, the Yamshel Shlomo wrote him questions. Tremendous, yeah, just bring him down. Tremendous Gadol B'Torah, right? And, just calm down, children, okay, right? Tremendous Gadol B'Torah. And so he had this idea. So Rabbi got very excited about this, and he found the Sefer, he started learning the Sefer. And B'Med, it added some things to his idea. And then he started looking to who is this Maaseh Hashem? Who's Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi? And he found out that he's actually a descendant of Rabbi Elazar Ashkenazi. So here's this Gadol B'Torah, 500 years ago, comes up with an idea. Nobody else has this idea, right? It's a very developed idea, and it gets lost. Nobody knows about it. And his descendant, 500 years later on his own, comes up with this idea and finds out that he's resurrecting a piece of Torah that was lost, that was his ancestors. I think that's amazing. So let's talk about this, okay? I want to share with you three things. Okay. First, I was reading an article about a conference that took place in Qatar. Okay, this is the political and financial support of Hamas. We're not big fans of Qatar these days, notwithstanding their attempt to broker deals for hostages. And they invited Hamas and Ashraf, the PLO, to a meeting that was sponsored by Russia in Qatar to try to push Israel to make a ceasefire. Without getting into all the details, and there's a photo there of these Hamasnikim and the PLO and the secular PLO and the religious Hamasnikim, and right in the middle of this group, holding up a big Palestinian flag, is a fellow with a big black hat and a beard and a kapata. And I realize I'm looking at an Aturi Karatanik. Okay? This is a sect of Hasidus, right? It's probably today's version of the Erev Rav, okay? Who basically support our enemies. It's beyond comprehension. Beyond comprehension. How does a person do that? How did a group of Jews get to the point where they can support terrorists? Right? And there was a... So that's the first question. There was a rabbi, fascinating story. He's known as the Oracle of Krakow. It could be that they'll tell you about him when you're in Krakow, those of you who go to Poland. His name is Uziathan. He was a rabbi, a Zionist, intellectual. And he offered up in 1920 a chilling drusha. Okay, he was born in 1870 to a poor Orthodox family. I'm going to spare you the whole story. In 1890, when he was 20, he went to Berlin. He studied philosophy and sociology. Wrote a doctoral dissertation. Very involved in Zionist activities. In the late 1800s, he met Asher Ginzburg. Anybody know who Asher Ginzburg was? He's also known as Echad Ha'am. He was one of the prolific and influential Zionist writers. And this fellow, right, Uziah Fun, he also became a contemporary and a confidant of Theodor Herzl. In 1897, he was actually offered an academic position at Berlin University. He turned it down. And in 1897, at the age of 27, he was appointed the rabbi of the Temple Synagogue in Krakow, which is a position that he held until his death in 1936. Now, what makes this Rav so fascinating? Okay, the Temple Synagogue membership was drawn much more from the more assimilated members of the Krakow Jewish community. Okay, and he was a perfect candidate for rabbi. Before he became the rabbi, now hear this well, before he became the rabbi, before accepting the position, he told the board, and I quote, they could tell him what to wear, they could tell him how long his sermon should be, however, they could not tell him, right, what to say on current issues. Okay? He felt that how he responds to current events is his own business. And if they would accept that, he'd become the rabbi, and they did. In after World War I, you know, we don't really understand the disaster that World War I inflicted on the Jewish community. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were murdered. Tens of thousands of children were made orphans. And the anti-Semitism that had exploded in the time of Dreyfus, that had created the Zionist idea, was on fire all over Europe. He said, this is going nowhere good. And he gave a sermon, many sermons, telling people they should go back to Israel. It was time to go to Palestine. It was time to get out of Europe. He made an enemy of the Bund, which was a nationalist... you can put it here. A nationalist, thank you, very nicely. Of the nationalist socialist who believed that, you know, we are Poles with a Jewish cultural tradition, our home is Poland, and that type of deal. And he gave a sermon in the year 1920, and he told his congregation, I'm leaving and I'm going to Eretz Yisrael and you should come with me. 10 families listened to him and went with him, the rest didn't. Listen to one paragraph from this sermon, and you can look this up online. In describing to them why he felt that we should be going back to Palestine, he says the following. And listen to this. Shh, guys. And war will once again come to the world. Greater than the first, in other words, the First World War. And more terrible than the first. Not tomorrow and not the following day will this war happen. Maybe in 18 or 20 years. And the hatred of the Jews will not be limited to Galicia or Poland alone. Rather, within each nation there will be and arise great anti-Semites. And the great nations will give birth to the greatest anti-Semites. And the hatred of Jews will spread throughout the world. This is a rabbi with a university degree and a PhD from a pulpit in Krakow, Poland in 1920. The hatred of Jews will spread throughout the world from end to end. By then you will be grandparents. And your grandchildren will be rolling in blood. They will be slaughtered and decapitated. Your granddaughters raped and disgraced. Your grandchildren will be laying on top of the mutilated corpses in thick forests full of deafening silence. This was a prediction of the Holocaust 20 years before it happened. If the communities would have listened to him, it wouldn't have been a Holocaust. How does a person have that wisdom? Okay? How does a person have that wisdom? All right? So I'm going to ask you a question. But before we do that, let me take a pause. So, here's a question. Chet HaEgel. Arguably the biggest mistake Jewish people ever made. A And there's something about Chet HaEgel which is inherently illogical. It just makes no sense. I mean, this is 40 days after the Jewish people not only heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but somehow saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They saw sound. No less than Hashem himself is telling them, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. How do you get to a Chet HaEgel? So that's a big question that everybody asks. And all of the Mefarshim talk about this, and you go to Shul, and chances are the Rav will give a drasha, and then the Divrei Torah will talk about it. Right? Okay. But Hashem actually describes what's at the root of this issue. It's a famous pasuk, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Right? Moshe is still up on top of Har Sinai. And Hashem says to Moshe, Ra'iti ta'am hazeh, v'hinei am she'orif. They're a stiff-necked people. Now, this is a unique term. This is the only place in the Torah that this term appears in this way. Right? Which makes it a little difficult, but as you'll see, it's not that difficult to understand what this term means. So if you had to translate what that means, what does it mean? They are what?
Stubborn.
They're stubborn. And Bemet, Unkelus says, Ama kashe kdalhu. They are, the kdal is the nape of the neck, the back of the neck. And they have a hard back of the neck. Why is that stubborn? So on one level, it could mean that the neck is sort of what allows a person to turn his head. But if the neck is stiff, you can't turn your head. You're stuck in one position. You're seeing things a certain way. So you're stubborn. You're stuck in one perspective, right? Okay, right? Rashi says that they turn their back on those who criticize them and refuse to listen, right? And that's what it means. Does anybody know, this would impress me, right? Does anybody know, where is the first place in the Torah that we find this concept of an Am Kshei Oref? So it actually describes this in Parshat, anybody know? Pardon? Nope, it's a good guess, but nope. Anybody know? It's in Mishpatim. It's a Pasuk in Mishpatim. Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Tet, I think. Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Tet. And it says like this. Oh no, that's the Pasuk I just read. One second. It's in Perek Chav Gimel. Apologies. Perek Chav Gimel, Pasuk Chav Zayin. It says, "Et emati eshlach lefanecha." Right, he's talking about the fact that they're going to conquer Eretz Israel. I will send my fear, my trembling before you. V'hamoti et kol ha'am asher tavo b'hem. And I will kill the entire nation that you come against them. These Canaanites with their idolatrous, pagan, licentious, cruel, murderous practices, right? You can't build an ethical society if you're living in the midst of people who don't keep Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, right? The seven Noachid laws. V'natati et kol oivecha elecha oref. And I will give all of your enemies before you a neck. What does that mean, I'll give you a neck, the nape of the neck? It means they'll turn tail and run, right? So the oref is the back of the neck, and it can also represent that you're running away from something. Okay, so you're stubborn, and you refuse to listen, all right? But the obvious question is, if they're stubborn, why now? And this is a question I never thought of until this friend of mine, Robbie, sort of came up with this idea. It's a great question. What does that mean that the root of Chet HaEgel is that they are stubborn? Why are they stubborn now? What are they being stubborn about? So what would the most obvious answer to that question be? They're being stubborn about what? They did Chet HaEgel. What are they being stubborn about? They don't believe in Hashem. So the issue is emuna. They don't have emuna. Right? Okay. But that's very problematic. Somebody tell me what the problem is with saying that all of a sudden now, for the first time, Hashem says they're a stubborn nation. He doesn't mention it before because they don't believe. What's the problem with that? Yeah? They didn't believe in God in Mitzrayim, but okay, they didn't experience things yet.
They just had revelation.
What happens at the end of Kriyas Yom Sof? Yeah.
They they start complaining about food and water.
Well, right? We'll get to that. No, it says Vayaminu Bashem. Right? Vayaminu Bashem Moshe Avdo. They did believe. The Torah says they believed. So how can you say they're being stubborn about belief? How can you say this nation doesn't believe in God? That makes no sense. Makes absolutely no sense. They're standing at the foot of Har Sinai. If there was ever a generation and a period of time when you absolutely knew that Hashem runs the world, it was where they're at. 10 plagues, Kriyas Yamsuf, Har Sinai, that can't be the it. So somebody mentioned something else. What else could they be stubborn? What does it mean they're stubborn? They can't stop. They can't stop.
Worshiping.
They can't stop. What do they do all the time in the desert? It drives Moshe nuts. They can't stop complaining. They can't stop complaining, right? That would be the second possibility. Maybe it's because they can't stop complaining. But that also doesn't make sense. And I'll give you a couple of examples, okay? If you look at the end of Kriyas Yamsuf in Perek Yudalad, right? Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? What does the Pasuk say? Vayomru el Moshe hamibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim? You took us out of Egypt. There are not enough graves in Egypt. You took us out to die in the desert. That sounds pretty much like complaining to me. And this is after 10 plagues. And they get them, Akash Baruch takes them out of Egypt. And they still are complaining? Why doesn't it say there that they're an Amshayaref? Right? If you look in after Kriyas Yamsuf, okay? They get to Mara, Perek Tet Vav, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, right? 15:24. And what does it say? Vayilonu Amal Moshe Lemor Manishter. They complain, what are we going to drink? And of course, the best example is the end of Bishalach. They get to a place called Rifidim. And what happens to Rifidim? They don't have any water, right? Where did you take us out of Egypt to kill us? They can't stop complaining. All through Bishalach. So why are we only saying that they're stubborn about complaining when we get to Chet Egel? Makes no sense. All right? So let me ask you a few questions. And then we'll see if we can put this together. Okay? So, B'nai Yisrael complained to Moshe and Aaron that Moshe and Aaron took them out to die in the desert. Now, I'm going to read this pasuk. You tell me what's missing, okay? You tell me what's missing. Perek Yudalad pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomru el Moshe, hamibli en kvarim b'mitzrayim. So they say to Moshe, what, there aren't enough graves in the desert? Mazot asita lanu lo tzianu b'mitzrayim. What did you do to us to take us out of Egypt? What's missing here? You're not sure? I'll give you another example. Look in... by the man in Perek Tet Zion, Pasuk Bet. Okay? They're hungry. Okay? They're hungry. Vayilonu kol adat bnei Yisrael al Moshe v'al Aaron b'midbar. So they start complaining to Moshe and Aaron. Vayimru aleh mi yitein muteinu, would that we could die in b'yad Hashem b'eretz Mitzrayim. We had plenty of bread there. Ki otzeitem otanu el hamidbar, that you took us out to this desert. What's missing? Yeah. Why are they complaining about Moshe and Aaron? Why don't they complain about Hashem? Why don't they say, why did God take us out into the desert? It doesn't make any sense. Right? Perek Yud Zayin. Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu mayin. They're constantly complaining, but they're not complaining to God. So that's the second question. The first question is, why is Amksheorif here? Why are they now stubborn? What are they being stubborn about? Second question is, how come they're only complaining to Moshe and Aaron and they're not complaining about God or to God who did this? You know, the Holocaust comes. You don't spend a lot of time complaining to Roosevelt. You ask Akash Baruch Hu, how could this happen? Right? Third question, okay? Burning bush. And Hashem tells Moshe, you're going to go to Egypt, okay? And you're going to free them. And when you get there, when you get to Egypt, Here's what you're going to tell them. Perek Gimel Pasuk Ded Zayin. Ko tomaru b'nei Yisrael. Hashem, Elokei Avotechem, Elokei, the God of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? Lech ve'asafta et ziknei Yisrael. Go and gather the elders of Israel. Right? There was a leadership to the Jewish people. They're called the Zkenim. The elders. This is the foundation for what will later be a Sanhedrin. Ve'amarta lehem, and tell them, these Zkenim, the leaders, Hashem, Elokei Avotechem, nirah elai. Lemor pakod pakaditi etchem. Go tell them, I, God, have remembered you. Now, right? Va'omar ele etchem mi'ani Mitzrayim el eretz ha'kanani, and I will take you up. I remember you, and I will take you up to the land of Israel. Okay? Now, why is this language, pakod pakaditi etchem, so important? Anybody remember? Nope. But close. Yosef. End of Parshat Vayechi. What does Yosef say to them? Right? Yosef says at the end of Vayechi, I apologize. Vayomer Yosef Alechav. This is the last verses of Sefer Brishit. Vayomer Yosef Alechav, Anochi met, I'm going to die. Ve'elohim pakod yifkot etchem. But God will remember you. Ve'ele etchem min haaretz hazot, and he will bring you back up out of this land. When that happens, you take my bones out. So this language of... Now listen. Yosef is not that long ago. In fact, according to Rashi, it's four generations. It's not that long ago. And Yosef has this line that he says to the brothers, right? There will come a time when Hashem will say, Pakod pakaditi etchem, I remember you, and it's time to go home. So Hashem tells Moshe, go and tell them this Kenim, Pakod pakaditi etchem, I remember you. This kingdom has to know this prophecy. If we know this prophecy, this kingdom then knew the prophecy. They're going to hear the magic code word. Right? Time to go home to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. But here's something interesting. When they actually go to Bnei Yisrael, right? Perek Dalet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, right? Aaron and Moshe, but really Moshe, goes down to Egypt. They meet the Jewish people. I'm going to leave out how exactly they communicate to the Jewish people. It's an interesting question. Right? So Aaron does the miracles, the snake and the staff and whatever else is going on. And the people believe, this is before things get difficult. They remember, the Hashem remembers their suffering. What's missing here? What's the most important part of the message that Moshe is coming to tell them?
Words.
Pardon?
Words.
Which words? No, they say, Ki pakad Hashem b'nei Yisrael, same language. What's missing here? I'll give you a hint. Borough Park. Crown Heights. Satmar. Nobody gets the hint? I'll read it again. Okay? Pardon? Yeah, they should have believed that Hashem remembers them and that they're going to go home. They don't say this. They don't mention Eretz Yisrael. It's kanireh not part of their mudaut. Right? So, in fact, by the way, Hashem says, we're just going to take them for 3 days in the desert. We talked about that once. Remember? There's this whole game going on. Moshe doesn't say now we're going back to Eretz Yisrael. Even though Hashem tells Moshe to tell them we're going back to Eretz Israel, they don't do that. Why not? There's no mention of Eretz Canaan. I'll give you an even better example. There's another question. So now we have three questions. Why is Amkshei Orif that there are stubborn people here by Chet Ha'egel? Why didn't they say it before? If it's about Emunah, they already believe. And if it's about that they're being stubborn, they were already stubborn. Why is it here? Number one. Number two, right? Why do they complain to Moshe and Aaron and not complain about Hashem? They're not talking to Hashem. Number three, why don't, when they tell the Skenim, why is Moshe told, Moshe telling them, or Hashem tells Moshe at the burning bush, I remember them and I'm going to bring them home to Eretz Canaan, but they don't mention this when they get to Egypt, and the Jews don't speak about it, right? Number four, listen to this question. The same sort of story where they're getting the man. Perek Tzayin Pasuk Vav. Right? What does it say? Vayomer Moshe v'Aaron al kol b'nei Yisrael. Right? The Jewish people are hungry. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't worry. Because tonight, what am I going to do? What's Hashem going to do? How? What's going to happen? They're hungry. They want bread. What are they going to get?
Man.
No, no, no. Listen to this. Erev v'yedatem ki Hashem otzi etchem me'eretz Yitzrayim. Tonight, after the man falls, you're going to know Hashem took you out of Egypt. Oh, come on. This question is so obvious. That's a ridiculous pasuk. Where are they now? They're in Midbar Sin. They're out of Egypt. This is after the splitting of the sea. Why only now are they going to know that Hashem took them out of Egypt? That's such a strange pasuk, right? And lastly, how long were the Jewish people in Mitzrayim? Perek Yud Bet. This is a very important pasuk. Perek Yud Bet, pasuk Mem. This is sort of in Parshat Bo, in the lead up to the actual Exodus from Egypt. As they're in the midst of preparing for Korban Pesach and the matzahs and everything else, listen to this pasuk. Umoshav b'nei Yisrael, asher yashvu b'mitzrayim, 30 shana ve'arbamot shana. The Jewish people were in Egypt for 430 years. Now that's an interesting problem. How long were the Jews actually in Egypt? Anybody know? 210 years. And that, by the way, is not some medrash. That's pshat. You look at how long, how old Yosef was when he stood before Paro. You look how old Levi was when he died. You can figure out, right, how many years they were in Egypt. It says that Yosef was 30 years old when he stood before Paro. He was 17 when he went down to Egypt. You start adding how old was Yosef when he died, how old was Levi when he died. You start to add all these things up, and you figure out that they were in Egypt for 430 years, for 210 years. So why does the Torah tell me they were there for 430 years? What does the number 400 years in Egypt remind you of? Pardon? The Brit Ben Aftarim. In the Brit Ben Aftarim, in the covenant, in Breshit and Perek Tet Vav, right? So Hashem tells Avram Avinu, "Vayomer Avram, Yadoi Teda, you should know, Ki Geri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem. Your children, your offspring, will be strangers in a land that isn't theirs. Ve'inu otam, and they will be caused to suffer. 400 shana, 400 years. So there's two questions here. One is, anybody notice the mathematical problem here? Pardon? Yeah, where are those extra 30 years? How come 400 years in Brit Ben Aftarim and 430 years mentioned in Egypt? And how come we know, now Rashi makes this clear. Rashi says, right, Bein HaKol, right, Mishenolad Yitzchak Adachshav, you are Bamochana. There were 400 years from the time Yitzchak was born until now when they're about to get out of Egypt. Right? And he says, Eif Shalomar Be'eretz Mitzrayim. You can't say that they were in Mitzrayim for 400 years. Sharei Kahat Min Abayim Im Yaakov Haya. Right? Kahat, right? Gershom Kahat and Merari, the sons of Levi, was one of the boys who went down to Egypt with Yaakov. V'lo Tzeyu Chshav Kol Shnotav. If you add up his entire lifetime, the Kol Shnot Amram, his son, and you add up the entire life, because the Torah tells us how long these people lived, right? Ushmonim Shal Moshe, the 80 years of Moshe. Moshe was 80 years old when he came down to Egypt, right? Lo Timtzein Kol Kach. You won't get the 400 years. So it can't be that there are 430 years in Egypt. So it must be that it comes from an earlier time. So Rashi says 400 years, and this is Chazal, it's a Medrash, 400 years is from the time that Yitzchak was born. What's 430 years? 430 years is in the time of Brit Ben Aftarim. It's an interesting question why that's added. Why is this important? Why is the Torah telling me this? So, what's really going on here? What are B'nai Yisrael stubborn about? And again, this is not my idea. Fascinating idea. Why did B'nai Yisrael leave out knowing that Hashem will take them home to Egypt, to Eretz Yisrael, right? What if B'nai Yisrael don't actually think that they're supposed to go to Eretz Yisrael? What if they think that the Nevuah says that they're supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. They're supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. Now, we know now, with hindsight, that the Medrash and Chazal, that the 400 years are counted from the time of Yitzchak or Avram. But they don't know that. They just know they're supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. So they still think that they have another 190 years to go. And if they have 190 years to go, then who says they're allowed to go up there to Israel? Here's an interesting question based on the Medrash. What would make them nervous about going up to Eretz Yisrael before it's time to go? Should I give you a hint? Yeah?
Ephraim.
Excellent. Shevet Ephraim. Now, what is the story with Shevet Ephraim? This is a freaky story, okay? All right? This is a freaky story. And the mucker for this is in the Medrash Rabbah. The source of this is in the Medrash Rabbah. And there are allusions to this in the Pasuk, but it's late. I'm just going to give you the basic story. All right? V'lo nacham Elokim derech Eretz Plishtim. And Parsha Peshalach, Hashem doesn't take us by way of the Plishtim. Now, we just said Pshat. We just said, you know, if they go by the way of the Philistines, they're going to have a war, they're going to fight, whatever. No. The Medrash says something else. Ela sheta'u shivtor shel Ephraim. The tribe of Ephraim made a terrible mistake. V'yatzu mimitzrayim ad shalosh alem haketz. They left Egypt before it was time to go. And all the other tribes said, you're making a mistake, it's not time to go. But they insisted on going. 300,000 of them or 30,000. And 300,000, right? 30,000s of them were killed. And why were they killed? Because they thought that the years began when Avram made the covenant of the Brit Ben Abtarim, right? With Hashem, the Brit, the covenant that the Jewish people will never be destroyed. So here it's 400 years. It says 400 years, right? V'ta'u lamed shana, and they were off by 30 years, right? And it gives proofs for this. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, im yiru Yisrael atzmot bnei Yefraim shtochim baderech chzru l'Mitzrayim. And the Philistines came out, and there's a description in the Medrash exactly what happened there and the mistake that they made. And it's a painful story, because even though it's way back in history, you're reading this story, and if it's pshat, 300,000 Jews are murdered by the Philistines on the outskirts of Gaza, in the city of Gath, Goth, right? And the Sefer HaYashar describes this story. Now, why, if in fact the 400 years is counted from the birth of Yitzchak, then why does it say here 430 years? Because 430 years is from the time of the Brit Ben Abtarim. So which is it?
Wouldn't that make Abraham 70?
Let's not get into the mathematics. You can come over me afterwards, okay? It's late, right? Okay? Right? If 430 years earlier was Brit Ben Abtarim, and 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, and the Brit Ben Abtarim says you're supposed to be in Egypt 400 years, and the Bnei Ephraim thought that it would be from the Brit Ben Abtarim, so that would be 400 years, they'd be ready to go. But really, it's 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. So why the extra 30 years? Why does the Torah tell us the 30 years? Because Yosef was 30 when he stood before Paro. And because of what we did, because of what the brothers did to Yosef, because of that debacle, the Jewish people deserved a little more struggle. And that's the number 30 that's alluded to. That's what the Medrash says, and that's what Rabbeinu Tam and the Sefer HaYashar says. Okay, right? So what's going on here, right? So what if Bnei Yisrael understood that there's a tradition and a prophecy that they're supposed to stay for 400 years? Comes along Moshe Rabbeinu and says, it's time to go. And they don't want to go, because they think, Emunah, right? Emunah is all about the fact that we have to wait until the prophecy is fulfilled. Maybe this is Moshe's idea. In fact, there's a Ramban that says that the people were afraid that Moshe wanted to take them into the desert so he could rule over them. He was a prince. He left them in the lurch, right? But Bnei Yisrael, Moshe is trying to explain to them, no. Hashem wants you to go out. This is from Hashem. Hashem wants you to leave Egypt. He wants to take us home. But they can't hear it. Why can't they hear it? Mikotzer ruach v'avodah kasha. Hashem almost plans it that they're not ready to hear it. Right? When Moshe and Aaron go to Paro, there's Canaan, and you can look this up, they disappear. They don't go with them. Maybe that's because the mission to go to Eretz Yisrael, that's Moshe and Aaron. The Zkenim have not bought into that. Right? They disappear. Maybe they don't believe that this mission is what. Maybe they think we should be going back to the Beis Medrash. You know, I met a... I was giving a shiur once in one of these Pesach programs. And I happened to quote the Minchas Alazar. Minchas Alazar was the Rebbe of Munkach. Tremendous Sfarim in Torah, whatever. He was vehemently anti-Zionist. But, you know, Torah is Torah. And I was giving a shiur. And a fellow came over to me and he said, I loved your shiur until you quoted the Minchas Alazar. He says, you shouldn't be quoting the Minchas Alazar. I said, why not? He says, I was from Munkach. And I was a from Yid. And my family is from. And I got an offer to have a job. I was 20 years old and there was a job waiting for me in America. But you know, we were Munkach Chassidim. So we went to the Rebbe to ask his rishus. And the Rebbe said, you shouldn't go to America. It's a trefa medina. Won't be good for you. You should stay in Munkach because this is the center of Torah. So my whole family stayed in Munkach. I could have gotten everybody out. And by the time everybody realized what a mistake this was, it was too late. So the Munkach Rebbe, he killed my family. Now I'm not debating whether that is MS or how you look at that. That's a complicated question. Right? We're not ready to go. Theodore Herzl comes and says, I'm a Navi. It's time to go home. They don't want to listen. Jabotinsky comes. Jabotinsky was known in the secular world as the Navi. Why? Because in the 1930s, he went all over Poland, desperately trying to get Jews to listen. He said, there's a storm coming, and you don't understand. This storm is going to be a storm the likes of which we have never seen. It's straight out of the Ramban and Bechukosai. The Meshech Chachma, in his introduction to the Klolos of Bechukosai, says... And the Meshech Chachma lived in the 1920s, at the same time of the Or Samech, in Meir Simcha of in Dvinsk. And he said, "There's a storm coming to the Jewish people. It is a storm the likes of which you have never seen. And when it's over, the Jewish exile will be destroyed. There will only be one place to go." They couldn't listen. They couldn't listen. And the people said, if Hashem wanted to take us out, he'd take us out himself. We're waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take us home. This isn't the time yet. Lo aleinu tlunot dechem ki al Hashem, says Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why Moshe says, now you'll know that Hashem is taking us home. Because they don't believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants this. Do we choose to see Yad Hashem? Do we get... that the scenario has changed. Why is this here? Because now, up until now, it wasn't clear. And Hashem does this for a reason. Because there's no value if Hashem forces us, overwhelms us, so that we leave Egypt. The question is, can we choose to leave Egypt? Can we leave it behind? Zacharnu et hadaga asher achalnu b'Mitzrayim. They look back with hindsight and it just always looks better back there. We should stay. You have to choose to leave. Why were they so stubborn, even in Har Sinai? Because the promise was after 400 years, right? So why does the Torah tell us this, right? Clearly, Bnei Yisrael think that they're not ready for Geula, right? Avram is told that Eretz Yisrael belongs to us. Yitzchak is told, Gur ba'aretz hazot, shchon ba'aretz sher omar lecha. You're going to live in the land of Israel. Yaakov is at the end of his life, Vishavti, and Beit El, he says, Vishavti b'shalom el Beit Avi. He wants to go home to Eretz Israel. Right? And Hashem says to him, he promises him, Lecha et nena ulazarecha, I will give this land to you. Yaakov wants to be buried in Eretz Canaan. Yosef wants to be buried in Eretz Canaan. But Bnei Yisrael felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was contradicting the Nevuah. And you know what the most amazing thing is? This is unbelievable. They bury Yaakov in Eretz Canaan, right? In Breshit, in Perek Nun. They all come up. They come back to Eretz Yisrael. Yosef and his brothers, everybody, right? And they get up to Eretz Yisrael. Sorry. And then it says, second. V'chol Beit Yosef ve'echavu Beit Aviv. So the entire house of Yosef, his brothers, everybody, they all go up to Eretz Canaan to bury Yaakov, but they leave behind their children, their flocks, they leave behind in Eretz Goshen, which means they don't plan on going home. And they mourn their father, and then Vayisuito banav Eretz Canaan, Vayikburoto, they bury him in Eretz Canaan, and then Vayashav Yosef Mitzrayim Ahu, Vayachav, Vachol HaOlim Mito, they go back to Egypt. The jaws of Egypt are closing on them, and they don't even see it. They go back. It doesn't occur to them. You know? So, what's our mission as a Jewish people? Our mission is to create a model society. To create a society that the world can learn from us how a society is supposed to behave, how an army is supposed to be, how a political entity is supposed to be. And we're not there yet. But we're closer than we've ever been because we're here. We can build a model society here. But we can't do it on our own. If half of Klal Yisrael is spread out over the world, it's not what it should be. And it's interesting. I wonder, and I don't have an answer to this, and I was not able to find anybody who talks about this, did the Avos think that Gerim Be'eretz Lo Lahem was Egypt? Or did they think we're supposed to be strangers in this land until it's time, until we're ready, until Hashem is ready to give the land to us? Who says they ever were meant to leave Eretz Yisrael? They were supposed to be home. Yitzchak is told never to leave Eretz Yisrael. And then what happens? The debacle of Yosef. If you're trying to create a model society, you could sell your brother as a slave. Something needs to change. So they all go down to Egypt, where they learn what it is to be a stranger, where they learn what it is to be empathetic, where they learn what's missing in society, so that they can come back and rebuild it. B'nai Yisrael felt Moshe Rabbeinu was missing the plot. Really? B'nai Yisrael was missing the plot. And that's the ultimate question here. Are we stuck in the way we see the world? Are we an Am Kshei Oref? Are we a people who's so stuck in the way we see the world that we can't look at it from a different perspective? There were 3.5 million Jews in Poland. There was a country that was waiting for them. And they just couldn't change the way they looked at it. And we look back at that and we just can't understand it. Except that now it's happening all over again. Let me tell you something. Maybe you saw this in the news. There was a speaker who came to speak yesterday in Berkeley. Big university, right? The Hillel in Berkeley. And it was a fellow, I forget his name. He was a past soldier in the IDF. He's a lecturer, a speaker. They had an event and a few hundred Jewish students came. Big deal. And a very large rally of pro-Palestinians, all screaming from the river to the sea, etc. Okay? And the Jewish students were threatened. They were assaulted. They were prevented from attending a speech by a Jewish speaker on campus. The campus police had to shut down the event when it became clear that they could not protect the students. And multiple students reported being spat on, screamed at, called derogatory names like Dirty Jew or You Jew, and physically assaulted by protesters. This is on a major university campus in America. If you would have told me a year ago that there could be pogroms against Jews in America, I looked at you like you're out of your mind. It's not so crazy anymore. So that's an interesting question. What's the red line? What would it take for the Jewish community to realize it's time to go home? Home is not Berkeley. It's not Teaneck. It's not Florida. This is home. Now, again, I'm not judging the individual. And I'm not talking about everybody has to struggle with this question. Are we stuck in something that we need to get out of? You know, who do we want to be? Jabotinsky or the Rebbe of Munkach? And with all great respect for the Munkach Rebbe and all of his Torah, one of the things the Holocaust taught us was Gedolei Torah can make mistakes. We should have learned this from the Torah because Moshe Rabbeinu makes mistakes. We didn't. Is this the generation where we're going to finally figure that out? You know who gets to decide that question? You do. That is the question of your generation. Where do we belong? Where is home? What do we do about this? This is a question. And this question is becoming more and more acute. And every time the Jewish people don't get it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'm going to tighten it a little more. Pay attention to what's going on in the world. That's the question. Right? The Cheta Egel is a people that is at the foot of Farsina and they don't get where they are. They don't understand that somebody moved the cheese. That's the challenge of Kitisa. Hashem should bless us that our necks get free and we see the world the way Hashem wants us to see the world. Everybody has to struggle with that question and figure out what the answers to those questions are. If you're curious to hear a little more, we can talk about this at the Q&A. I wish everybody an awesome Shabbos. We're going to bench now.